Hello, everybody. It's the Young Lads, Peter DeFeed Jr. alongside Harris Eisenberg with you for episode 9 of the Young Lads podcast. We just finished watching the national championship game. Spoiler alert, if you didn't watch it, LSU is your national champion for the 2023 season, beating the Florida Gators, which brings me a little bit of joy being a FSU fan. They beat them 18-4, and Paul Skeens was named your most outstanding player, along with being named to the all-tournament team, along the likes of Dylan Cruz, Trey Morgan III, Ty Floyd. We'll talk about Thatcher Hurd, too, because Thatcher Hurd had an amazing game today. We thought it maybe got away from him a little bit at the beginning, because after the first two batters, they were down 2-0, LSU was. But Harris, just right off the top of your head, first the reactions of the game that we just watched.
Well, it looked like it was getting a little bit away from Thatcher Hurd. He allowed those two early hits, but other than that, he was excellent. I don't think he allowed a hit till, you know, later on in his outing when he came out after the sixth inning. But, I mean, LSU put the thumping on. I mean, Florida came out yesterday and, you know, really said, okay, you know, we can hang in here. But LSU was the number one team in the country for most of the year for a reason, and it was because of their offense. I mean, you look at Dylan Cruz, Tommy White, and it wasn't just those two, right? It was Cade Beloso, the Bayou Bambino, electric nickname, by the way, getting it done too offensively as their DH. Trey Morgan was great on both sides of the ball. Just everybody up and down. Like Jordan Thompson had a nice bounce back game. You know, there's just so many other guys that contributed to LSU. I think the biggest standout, just not only of the game we just witnessed, but overall in the College World Series, is just the pen for LSU. And that just brings it in to tonight's game where Thatcher Hurd gets the start, right? He's been in the pen, you know, for all the College World Series and for the postseason. And it's like, okay, you know, this is another one of those iffy scenarios where, you know, it's not Skeens and it's not Floyd, so who knows how this can go. And Thatcher Hurd really quieted down those people who said this LSU pitching depth is weak. I mean, heck, I said it. Right. I mean, I didn't think they were going to have the depth to get through, and they really did. So, props to them. Just a historic team. Dylan Cruz, Paul Skeens, 1-2 combo in the draft coming up. Tommy Tanks, electric. And they had all the pieces around them to get it done. So really, no surprise.
Yeah. I mean, we saw Thatcher Hurd do what he did against Wake Forest on Thursday when he came in after Skeens and threw the 9th, 10th, and 11th. And got LSU, you know, that chance to walk it off with Tommy Tanks in the bottom of the 11th. But, you know, a lot of people were talking about on the broadcast, too. Like, we didn't expect the bullpen to be the way the bullpen was. Now, other than, I guess you can say yesterday, because that was the bullpen that gave up the 24 runs, they had been amazing this entire postseason, going back to the regionals. But, yeah, Thatcher Hurd, Ty Floyd stepped it up big time, because even Kyle Peterson, you know, guy from Stanford who's been around the college game for a long time, said at one point in the broadcast, we thought it was going to be Paul Skeens and then, you know, kind of hope. And that wasn't the case. You know, Thatcher Hurd had some big innings. Guidry had some big innings. Atkinson had a big game. I believe that was against Tennessee, where he threw those 5 innings and got them to win again against Tennessee. So this was a pitching staff that, when they needed them, stepped up, and that's exactly what needs to happen, because you knew the offense was going to be good. You knew Dylan Cruz and Tommy White at the 1-2, even Trey Morgan III, were gonna do what they done all year. But then you had guys like Dugas step up. You had Palacio step up. You know, Malazio, instead of I know he went down with the injury today, but you know, you had Travinsky step up in the catcher's role. Thompson had a big game today after having all those errors yesterday. So we knew the offense was going to be where it's at, and we knew Skeens was going to give you 8, 9, maybe even 13 innings if he had to. He could have came out today if he wanted to, but I guess they decided after they were up 16-4, like, hey, you know what? We probably have this, so we'll just send out Guidry for the second inning. But this LSU bullpen proved a lot of people wrong, and Jay Johnson got his coveted national championship in his second season. Think about the hirings that the AD for LSU, I forgot his name, but I just saw it on Twitter too. Now I forgot how to her name. The women's basketball coach
Oh, who is it? I had it too and just lost it.
Mulkey.
Oh, Kim Mulkey. Yep.
Yep. Kim Mulkey. I can remember what her first name was. Kim Mulkey, Jay Johnson, and Les Miles in 2021, all in the span of 7 months.
Don't forget about Brian Kelly, too, coming into 2022.
Not Les Miles. I'm sorry. That's who I meant. Brian Kelly. Les Miles was on my brain. Because of the vacated wins that he just had to give up. That's why he was on my brain. But Brian Kelly, Kim Mulkey, Jay Johnson. I think LSU's in for some pretty good times there in the sports department.
Yeah, pretty cool. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they come out next year. You know, it's definitely not going to be the same team with Cruz and Skeens and a bunch of other guys going to get picked in the draft coming up. But also credit out of the pen, a couple lefties. Riley Cooper, big dog, California native out of the pen, just goes up there, chucks. Like, he just, his demeanor on the mound is awesome. And he's going to be a junior next year, sophomore this year. So he's great. And Griffin Herring, the freshman, did a nice job against Wake Forest in that elimination game. I mean, people forget Wake Forest, you know, those two teams, Wake Forest and LSU, had to play twice. Wake Forest only needed to win one of those games. And Griffin Herring and the Penn were able to come through in that first game in what was a bullpen day to help LSU advance to that Skeens-Louder matchup, which I think is something that we should be talking about not only today, but maybe forever as one of the best college baseball games maybe of all time.
I mean, because that lived up to the hype and then some. I mean, we were talking about it the Monday before. We were like, selfishly, we want to see LSU win the first game against Wake Forest because then you'd have Louder against Paul Skeens. And I mean, both guys went 7 innings. I know Skeens went 8. No runs. I think Skeens had like 9 strikeouts. Louder had 8. I mean, it was as advertised. And it was probably the best college baseball game, if not in the last couple of years, maybe it's top 10 ever.
Yeah, I think it's in the top 3, if not number 1. To be quite honest with you,
what was on the line too? It wasn't just a regular season game where these guys were going at it, and it wasn't super regionals. It wasn't regionals. It was for a chance to play for a national championship game. The only way that would have been better is if that was tonight's game, if it was game 3 of the championship series.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and you got two guys who are likely going in the top 10 of the draft going at it. Two of the best pitchers in the country. It was great. It's the first baseball game I have watched, aside from any game that I've done live in person. It's the first baseball game that I have watched and could not take my eyes off the screen. It was that good, and there were only 2 runs. Remember that? Tommy Tanks did it. There were only 2 runs in the game, but the game was great. I mean, the pitching was unbelievable. Rhett Louder, Michael Massey came in, and he was electric out of the pen. I mean, that was spectacular. To me, that's the best game that we will see for a long, long time. And you're right, it lived up to the hype. And, you know, when the good guys needed to be stars, they were, right? Tommy Tanks, you know, came up in the situation at the right time. He cranked one. Ultimately, Wake Forest's demise was that, you know, Nick Kurtz went down. He struggled anyways, but he went down with an injury. And Brock Wilkin, aside from that home run in the first game that he hit, just, you know, didn't have what Brock Wilkin had all year long. And the Wake offense was really kind of quiet in this postseason. But yeah, that game was great. And I think once LSU got past Wake Forest, you kind of had a feeling that it was going to be, you know, the Tigers championship to win or lose.
Yeah, and I mean, going to Florida, we saw what they were capable of offensively, especially in Game 2, obviously in Game 2. And Game 3 was – Game 1 was a little different because you had you know, a little bit of trouble getting your footing. But then Ty Evans, who broke the record for most home runs in a College World Series, looked fantastic. If Florida wins, he's probably the most outstanding player because of how we went about it. But then you got guys like Jack Caglione, who – was kind of quiet for Florida in this game. You know, behind the plate, their catchers didn't really do a whole lot this year, this playoffs. And just, you know, Langford was good, but I don't think he was – he definitely didn't have the College World Series we thought he was going to have, like how Dylan Cruz and Tommy White did. But, you know, Ty Evans was really the unsung hero for Florida, he was a sophomore that came off the bench, hit that big two-run home run in the first game. I believe that was against Oral Roberts. And then just kind of went off from there. And you know, they go crazy for 24 runs yesterday. But then other than that, their offense kind of looked lifeless. Other than the occasional home run, which, you know, we've seen that with teams like the Rays where it was last year. If you didn't get a home run, you weren't winning games. So it just happened that LSU's pitching just stifled this Florida offense.
Yeah, and in a ballpark like Charles Schwab Field, pitching is going to win you games because there weren't many home runs in this College World Series. I think there were 16 total homers. Ty Evans had a bulk of them. I mean, he was the hero yesterday, two home runs, including that grand slam to help Florida win. But yeah, you're right. I mean, this College World Series really came down to precise pitching. Ultimately, LSU had that, and they were able to come away. I mean, Caglione was just not himself this whole entire World Series. I mean, yeah, he had a home run yesterday. On the mound, he was not great tonight. I mean, he gave up six to start the game. And once that happened, it was like, okay, LSU's just going to keep chipping away. So ultimately, I just want to get your takeaways on this because, I mean, for me, it's like, okay, it's kind of a, I'm not going to say an emotional moment, but it's kind of like, damn, like that's it. You know, no more college baseball. This was really the first season for me where I really followed all the way through every nook and cranny of college baseball and was just so locked in during the regionals, the super regionals, and the World Series. I mean, this was a fun postseason. And I think for people who, you know, question the college game and are not that into it, yeah, I know everyone's on the transfer portal, yada, 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 and we'll talk about that. But, I mean, man, just what a fun time to be a baseball fan watching this week in Omaha.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about it too. It's like I hadn't really been paying attention to college baseball other than to when it gets to the postseason. And, you know, for the last, I would say 25% of the regular season, I started to really watch games, and because we were talking about it, and I, you know, kind of forced myself to watch some college games. But this was probably one of the best College World Series / postseasons I've ever watched. I mean, just the entire West Coast part of the regionals into the super regionals, I think, were my favorite part. Just staying up late, watching Stanford and Texas play that amazing 3-game series, watching Oral Roberts and Oregon play that amazing 3-game series. And just kind of following along with those teams into Omaha. It's kind of like I've been the kind of guy that's like watched every now and then. I'll obviously watch the championship series, but you know, for the first time sitting down and watching all what 12 games, 14 games? How many games were there played in Omaha?
I believe it was let's go 14 because why not?
I think we have to have we could have an even number. Anyways, I sat down and watched every single game, and it was probably the best baseball I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, it was great. And, you know, for us, you know, we see like, you know, and I think for people just getting into the game, it's like, okay, like Dylan Cruz, you watch him. He's going to be the number one pick. That's a guy to keep your eye on, you know, for the next few years. Paul Skeens, best pitching prospect in the draft. Like, that dude is must-see TV. Like, he's a guy to keep an eye on, you know, going down the line. It's cool to see that. It's like, okay, I saw these guys win a national championship, and now they're going to get drafted in, you know, in a couple years. Heck, maybe in a couple months with Skeens, you know, they're up in the big leagues, you know, doing their thing. So just super cool. A great college baseball season. And, you know, LSU was the team at the beginning of the year, right? They were preseason number one. They held that number one until, you know, May when they had a bit of a rough spell. But all the good teams face adversities. And, you know, I think for me, what separated LSU from Wake Forest, because those two to me were really the big favorites in winning the World Series, Wake Forest never really had to face much adversity this year. I mean, they just kept winning. They played a lot of home games. They always won in their home yard. It was a guaranteed lock anytime they played at the couch. You know, LSU had to face a lot of adversity that final month of the year, and they were able to pull through it. And you know, Jay Johnson built a winner, even though it was through the portal, whether you like it or not. I mean, that's the age of college baseball we're in.
Yeah, and also going back to it, how I can't remember the last time that we've had this much first round talent in Omaha too, because you got to think just in the Golden Spikes award list that were in the championship series, you got Skeens, Cruz, and Langford, who that's probably going to be the order that they go in. But you also have Waldrop. You also had Caglione, who I know he's not draft eligible, but he's going in the first round next year, probably as a two-way player, if not as a bat, because he's probably going to be the best college bat now that, Dylan Cruz, you know, is going to be drafted. You got Tommy White, who's not draft eligible, but, you know, he'll be draft eligible next year. Could be a first-round draft pick. Who knows? But then you had Taylor, the third baseman with TCU. You had a couple of arms with Tennessee and Dolander and Chase Burns. So we had a lot of first-round talent, you know, if not, you know, top two-round talent in Omaha this year. And that's the first time I can remember, you know, remember that much being in Omaha at one point. And I think that's what drew a lot of people too, is because they wanted to see the, I guess Skeens kind of became a legend. Louder became a legend. You know, Brock Wilkin kind of became a Wake Forest legend. We wanted to see how these guys played. So I think that's what kind of gravitated a lot of people towards this College World Series, because I would have to assume that this is one of the most watched ones, especially when Skeens and Louder faced each other on Thursday. I'd have to assume that that was one of the most watched college games of the entire season. So I think that helps too when, you know, you have these teams that are able to develop their players as well as they do. And I know Skeens and White came through the portal, but, you know, you still got to develop them, because Skeens was okay at Air Force. It still took Jay Johnson to kind of develop him and say, hey, let's just hone your craft pitching wise, and we're going to get you to be the best pitcher. Because he probably had the best pitching performance of a season, especially in Omaha, that we've seen in a very long time.
He was a two-way guy at Air Force, remember? He was a catcher.
I saw a picture,
Jay Johnson came in, they honed the craft.
Air Force tweeted out a picture saying congratulations to Paul Skeens and his teammates at LSU. And it was a picture of him putting, you know, Air Force's name on a bracket, and he was wearing catcher's gear. He was wearing a shin guards. And I was like, that is weird to see.
I thought it was really cool how they incorporated that whole story about Skeens' his two passions, really, baseball and serving in the military. I thought it was really awesome. They had the Air Force pitching coach there. They put out some interview on the NCAA Twitter and the other social medias. They kind of like walked from the outfield to the pitcher's mound. I thought it was brilliant. I mean, you get to the inside of the kid and how much he cares about, you know, giving back to the military community and serving. Like, I thought it was awesome. And for him to get a little, you know, emotional about it too was really cool. He just seems like a giant on the mound, and you really got to see the person there. But I wanted to spark this debate with you because I heard you bring up the draft order, right? So who is going number one in your opinion? Is it Cruz or is it Skeens? Because I kind of look at it two ways, right? For me, it's like, okay, Cruz kind of seems like he's the number one just because of position-wise. You know, pitchers, you know, most of the time they're always – Tommy John is basically a guarantee at this point with every pitcher. So it's just a matter of time. And for Cruz, it just seems like this dude, you know, he hit above 420 this year. He's got powers, a five-tool player. He's just a ball player. I've never seen someone carry himself at that age like Dylan Cruz. So who is your number one overall pick in your opinion?
I'm always going to be biased because I'm a pitcher, and I think you should never pass up on a generational type pitcher. Gerrit Cole, Steven Strasburg, David Price when he got drafted, Clayton Kershaw when he got drafted, you know, so forward, you know, so on and so forth. So to me, I'm going to be biased and say that I think Paul Skeens should be the number one pick because the Pirates are then going to get their Gerrit Cole, right? They're going to have their pitcher for the next, you know, 6 to 8 years, depending on how long they pay him and if they can lock him up long term. But then on the other hand, do you want a position player that is going to be able to stick in center? That's the big thing too for Dylan Cruz. It's not that he plays center field and he's possibly going to be, you know, have to play the corners. He can stay in center. Now I know they have Brian Reynolds that they just locked up long term, but he also plays the infield. So you can move Dylan Cruz to center field, and it's not like you're putting him in center field because, oh, we draft him as a center fielder. No, he's going to stick at center field. You know, he's not like a shortstop that has to be moved to third or, like in Harper's case, a catcher that's got to be moved to right field, or in Schwarber's case, a catcher that's got to be moved to right field, he's going to stick in center field and he's going to play gold glove caliber defense. I mean, we saw what he did, or the plays that he made in this College World Series. So it just, it also depends on, do you want, with your number one pick, do you want a guy that's going to give you 30 starts and only going to be able to play 30 games for you? Or do you want somebody that's going to be able to play 150 and contribute with the bat? But like I said, to begin this debate, I'm always going to lean towards pitching because of the position I played growing up and in college and how I view pitching. I think that if you have a chance to get your ace, your Garrett Cole, your Steven Strasburg, your Clayton Kershaw, David Price, you know, Max Scherzer, you know, so on and so forth, I think you have to take that chance.
Yeah, to me, it could really go either way. I mean, also, we mentioned it in the last podcast, you know, the Pirates were in contention. They're really not contention now. They're on a pretty big skid. But what do the Pirates lack? I mean, do the Pirates lack pitching? Kind of seems like it, you know, in terms of their system and what they're doing right now in the regular season. But you're right. I mean, think about how dynamic that Pittsburgh Pirates offense could be in a year or 2 years' time. Dylan Cruz in center field. O'Neill Cruz at shortstop. Slide Brian Reynolds to second base. And who knows what's coming through the system. And I'm probably missing a couple guys. And you have a Pirates team that was in contention for the first 2.5 months of the year that has now just gotten exponentially better. Because we've seen it, right? Like, Jacob DeGrom came to the Mets in 2014. Mets weren't good right away. Right, and also DeGrom had four other aces on that staff, so it wasn't all DeGrom. And even the 2 years that DeGrom won the Cy Young, Mets were awful. You know, is a pitcher going to change your franchise drastically? Yes, obviously. In terms of Paul Skenes, yeah, you're getting a generational talent. But like you said, can he contribute all 162 games? No, that's just not how pitching works. So, you know, I don't know. It's really tough because Skenes is just—we've never seen this before. A guy who just free and easy can go 100. And, you know, I talk about injuries, like, you know, Tommy John does really seem like a guarantee to every pitcher at this point. But, I mean, the dude is just so free and easy, and he really cares about his routine. It's like, you know, Pittsburgh might miss out on a good one.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Peterson was saying it, and a lot of people were saying it, too, the whole season. It was like, you were watching a major league ace in college. And the last time we saw that was probably Garrett Cole. So, you know, we were watching a guy that we knew was going to be pitching, you know, to take the term that the NFL scouts use for college football guys, you were going to see him play on Sundays. We were going to see this guy pitch opening day. He was going to be the opening day starter for somebody somewhere along the road. It was whether it was going to be, you know, Pittsburgh, Washington, or Detroit, who have the first three picks in that order. So, you know, if you're Pittsburgh, do you want to let him go to Washington and then you have to face him down the line saying, gosh, we could have probably had him? Because in like I keep saying, in my mind, you can't pass up on a generational talent like that. And I don't know how many Pittsburgh Pirates fans we have listening to this show, but, you know, you could have a core of O'Neill Cruz, Dylan Cruz, Tamar Johnson, who they just drafted a couple of years ago, Henry Davis, who was the number one pick as their catcher, who's up in the big leagues right now, and Eddie Rodriguez. Those five guys. Or you could just take Dylan Cruz out and add Paul Skenes. So it's just fit at that point. It's just preference. Because you can't go wrong, I don't think. I don't think, and I can go out a little bit of a limb here, but I don't think we're going to be calling one of those two players busts. I think they will have some type of major league career that they might not be a Mike Trout or a Bryce Harper, but I think if they're, I don't know, if Paul Skenes is 2012 to 2019 Steven Strasburg, I think you won a draft pick. I don't think you can you can honestly tell me that from 2012 to 2019, Steven Strasburg wasn't the best pitchers. If it's 2018 to present day Gerrit Cole, where he's just striking out everybody, you can't go wrong with that either. And then Dylan Cruz, I can't find a comp right now off the top of my head, but you know, if he in 10 years as a 5-time All-Star finishes top 5 in MVP twice, you're happy. But I think at this point now it's just fit. Do you want your center fielder for the future, or do you want your ace for the future?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, this was the first draft that I can remember really looking forward to because, heck, you know, Paul Skenes could be pitching in the big leagues right now. He really could. I mean, think about it if you're a Washington Nationals fan for a second. You get no attendance. You're in last place, which, I mean, the way the Mets are playing, I mean, the Mets could be in last place by September, so who knows? But you are at the bottom of the NL East, and you're going to tell me in September when the minor league season's over you're not going to bring up Paul Skenes to boost attendance? You're out of your mind.
See, this is where I kind of disagree with you. If anybody other than, because I think Texas has the fourth pick, but I don't think Skenes is getting to Texas. If Paul Skenes isn't picked number one overall by Pittsburgh and they're not like 2.5 games out of first place and out of a playoff spot, if I'm drafting Paul Skenes, I'm not letting him touch a baseball or go off of a mound for a month. Like he's the rest of this year, I am deloading him, and then we'll ramp everything back up in the playoffs or in the off season. Like it'll kind
so
of just
shut
be like
it
a,
down,
not like shut it down completely, but so let's see. It'll be July 9th, I believe, is the draft. Mm-hmm. From July 9th to August 9th, he's just playing catch, recovering from the long season that he just had, because the last like 5 starts he threw 120 plus pitches and he was getting hot today like he was going to throw the ninth if it was a lesser lead than 18-4 than it was right now. And then from basically August to October, I think I maybe throw him in 6 games.
Now, what if you did this? What if you just shut him down for the rest of the summer and threw him in like the Arizona Fall League? Right?
Because
that way
I don't want to shut him down completely. I still want him to get work and I still want him to face, you know, professional talent, quote unquote. Because, I mean, you can, you know, depending on where they put him. But, I mean, they're still professionals. Don't get me wrong. But
I
still want him to throw, but I think I'm throwing him like once a week between August and whenever the, you know, if you put him in Double A, I think Double A ends around the same time that the major leagues end. So I'm kind of just throwing them once a week. And they only play, you know, they play 6-game series against, you know, the same opponent. So I'll throw them once, like on a Tuesday. I'll throw them every Tuesday. That way he gets, you know, 6 starts. He gets his rhythm in. He can kind of develop some type of routine. That's what he was doing in LSU anyways. He was throwing every 6 days because he was the Friday starter. So in my opinion, that's what I'm doing. If I'm Pittsburgh and I'm 2.5 games out of first place and there's, you know, a month left of the season, maybe I think about bringing him up and putting him in the bullpen or having him start every now and then. But I don't want to put – what I don't want to do is he threw, what, 140 innings this year? I don't want him to go 200 innings – and have him pitch 200 innings, but have him pitch in meaningless games. I'd rather those last 60 innings be in games that actually matter, that I actually need. So, like, if from July to August, he's just throwing in all of August, I'm throwing him every other week or every week on a Tuesday, I'm having him go 4-5 innings. That's all I need. I just need to see that you can get through 4-5 innings. Keep working on everything. Keep working on your slider. Keep working on curveball, changeup, fastball, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But unless Pittsburgh is even if they're 6 games out and like a month to play, that's okay. Stay in the minors. Get your routine down for what it's going to be like, you know, next year or, you know, the year after when I bring you up. But I don't want to put meaningless innings on an arm that's already thrown 140, 160 already.
Yeah, I could accept that. I mean, that's a good call now thinking about it. That makes total sense. So, yeah, I mean, who knows what could happen, but I'm excited for the draft. I mean, just a great college baseball season. And, I mean, still a lot to talk about here because, you know, we're, what, less than a week removed from Wake Forest getting eliminated. And here we go with the transfer portal. I mean, we could get into that real quick just because I think it's so interesting. I actually saw that somebody on Twitter made an Excel doc of every single player in the transfer portal. And I just scrolled through that for like a good 45 minutes right before we came on to see who was in it. Seven Demon Deacons are in the portal. Two notably, Adam Ciciri and Danny Corona. Now, those might be surprising. To me, they're not surprising at all. I sent the tweet to you. Just wanted to get your take on just kind of, I guess, those two entering the portal and just the portal in general. We saw Colby Shelton, who was a freshman All-American, just transferred to Florida. So the Gators are getting repolstered offensively. He leaves Alabama to go to the Gators. And there's more to come because Cannon Peebles, as we talked about last episode, he's in the portal. Peyton Green, NC State shortstop, he's in the portal. So
the kid from Clemson went to South Carolina.
Yeah, Billy Amick is in the portal. Yeah, he just transferred to South Carolina. I think that was pretty recent.
I don't understand the Wake Forest one. Just because of the season that you had, I don't understand why you wouldn't try to run it back. And that's just how my brain works. It's like, why would you not want to stay with Wake Forest? You're the number one team. I know you're losing Brock Wilkin and Rhett Lauder and probably a couple other guys to the draft and just to graduation. But, you know, in my mind, why not run it back? Why not see, instead of transferring out, why not see if you can entice a couple of transfers to come in? Like how Virginia did with Kyle Teal. They said, hey, we need a backstop. Why don't you come in? Or how LSU did with Tommy White and Paul Skeens. Like, hey, you two are missing pieces for a national championship run. You know, we need you in here. So, like, that surprises me a little bit, especially with the amount of talent that's in the transfer portal already. I'm sure you can, for lack of a better term, pick some of those guys off from going somewhere else. Because also, especially if you're a hitter, you know, Ciciri and Corona hit, what, 13 and 15 home runs apiece. You keep talking. I've never 10 seen
and 13,
their ball,
yeah.
I've never seen the ballpark myself, but you've seen it. And you say it's a Cracker Jack box. So why would you not try to stay there, get your numbers up, and then also have or try to entice some hitters to come with you, get their numbers up, and then, you know, I know regular season stuff doesn't matter. They want to perform in the postseason, but that could lead into postseason success if you're getting guys that were good enough to play at the Alabamas, the Vandys, the, you know, the Oklahoma States, the Stanfords, the Oregons, the whatever, and you have them come into your program, then you're going to be a pretty good team.
So here's my take on it. Now, I agree with you, and I wish this was more of what college baseball players' mindset should be, is that, okay, let's run it back, let's try to get it done, you know, let's play as a team. But the one downside of college baseball is this: college baseball has become a little bit of a selfish game, right? And for good reason. You know, these kids, ultimately, at the end of the day, yeah, do they want to win a national championship? Of course. But they want to be put in they want to be put in the best position to succeed, right? They want to be put in the best position to succeed so they can get more eyes on them. Now, Ciciri, this is a guy when I called High Point Wake Forest back-to-back years. I had him 2022. He hit the longest baseball I've ever seen in my entire life. His swing looked like he could have been the best hitter on this Demon Deacons team this year, but not the case in 2023. He was a little bit injured. If you had Ciciri pre-hamstring injury going into the World Series, Wake is a totally different team with Ciciri healthy. He just ultimately never really recovered from that injury. The Ciciri one's a little surprising because I feel like the coaching staff knows him a little bit, and I feel like a team will pick him up. But he ultimately struggled, and I felt like he was a really good team guy, so maybe a change of scenery might have been good for him, but that one was a little bit surprising. The Danny Corona one I initially thought was surprising, but then I thought about it. And I'm getting up to a little trend here. Ride along with me on this. So Tommy White enters the transfer portal last year. why? Yeah, NIL money is a part of it. But this is a third baseman in high school who they had playing first base at the beginning of the year at State. We're rewinding to 2022. They had him at first base at State, and then they DH'd him the whole year. So what do these players want to do? They want to play the field. So Tommy White goes on the portal, goes to LSU. He's the everyday third baseman. Boom. Cannon Peebles right now. Great rookie catcher, NC State. Problem. He never caught. Jacob Cozart's their guy. So he goes in the portal. Why? Wants to play the field. Danny Corona didn't have a spot in the field this year for Wake Forest. Didn't have a spot in the lineup until the middle of the year. Comes in the lineup. Great down the stretch. Great in the postseason. But what position is he playing? None. He's a DH. Right? So ultimately, these kids want to play the field. So I understand why they're going in the portal. Right? It makes sense. Because ultimately, if you're just a DH, well, why not, if you're going for the draft, why not take a random right fielder who's hitting 400 and just make him the DH? You know? So that's my theory of it. These kids want to play the field. They want to get eyes. Corona is a middle infielder by trade. This is a kid who was drafted out of high school. He's going to be a junior next year. So this is a year, like, if he could have the same production that he had this second half that he had at Wake at another school, playing second base or playing shortstop, boom. Kid's a lock. Right? Going to be a high draft pick. So I understand why these kids are going to the portal. So that's just my take on it.
Yeah, and now we're really starting to see that, like, mid-major programs too, and I know Clemson's not a mid-major program, but they're an ascending ACC program, but a lot of these kids are using their freshman programs as, you know, the schools that they go to as freshmen as kind of like junior colleges in a way. They're using them to get recruit to start playing their career, or to start their career, and then they're going to a school that they know they're going to get a lot more eyes on. And you're going to get a lot more eyes on you at South Carolina than you are at Clemson. Same thing at LSU other than NC State. Now I know they're going to find you no matter where you are. And if Tommy White would have stayed at NC State this year, there's no doubt that he probably would have, you know, still been Tommy Tanks. It's just that leading the SEC in RBIs sounds a lot better than leading the ACC in RBIs, as much as, you know, you and I are ACC guys. You know, same thing with Dylan Cruz. Yes, he probably would still be the number one pick if he was in, you know, Oregon, just because if you're going to hit 400 for all 3 years of your career and play the defense that you're going to play, or that, you know, Dylan Cruz played, you know, they're going to find you. But doing that for LSU and the SEC since you were 18 years old, because that was another kid that was drafted out of high school that said, no, I want to go to college and experience college and play for a national championship. Well, you know, check. You know, now he's going to, you know, now he's going to be drafted number one overall. Not to say that Paul Skeens wouldn't have done the same thing at Air Force if he would have just focused on pitching and not have been a two-way guy. But, you know, a lot of these guys are using, you know, their initial programs that they go to as JUCOs. And there was another thing that was brought up too. I forgot who brought it up. It was on MLB Network though, that, you know, we're seeing a lot of transfers too, and we don't know if we kind of think that they're going to die down because of the kids that are getting recruited from COVID. Or, like, we thought it was going to die down a little bit because the kids that went, you know, picked their schools from COVID because they had no choice where to go, you know, transferred out because they were like, oh, let me just pick this school, and then they ended up not liking it, and now they're transferring. But now, you know, I wonder if we'll see that trend kind of start to die down as, you know, recruiting and everything are going back to as normal as possible. I don't know, you know, if recruiting's ever going to be back to normal. I don't know if they've changed anything recruiting-wise since COVID hit, because I was already out of school, and, you know, I graduated that year with my bachelor's before going back, but that's another, you know, that's a story for another time. But, you know, I wonder if we'll see things change because we're going to be now, what, really three, almost 4 years removed from the virus and a full recruiting cycle, you know, freshman to senior recruiting cycle away from it. So I wonder if we will see, like, okay, I'm going to play my freshman year here. I'm going to have a really good year. Now I'm going to go here for my sophomore and junior year because, you know, whatever, X, Y, and Z. So I wonder if we'll see that start to die down just a little bit.
I hope it does. And you bring up a good point. This is upcoming, the final year of those COVID kids, you could say, that have that extra year of eligibility. So that's a good point. I hope it doesn't take away from the JUCO game. I mean, I know how valuable junior college schools and programs are to baseball. I mean, there are some phenomenal JUCOs. I mean, you know, you played for one, you know it. You know, there's great JUCOs in Texas, Louisiana, Arizona, and it's kind of dying down now because of the way the portal's going. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to change in terms of recruiting, you know, from JUCO, because, I mean, to be honest with you, guys are just going to keep throwing their name in the portal. I don't think that's ever going to stop at this point unless the NCAA kind of cracks down on it, because it's borderline free agency at this point, just most of the time without the money. So, you know, who knows? But it's always interesting to see what names come in the portal. It'll be interesting. You know, I bet you in the will come in and, you know, more guys will transfer. But the Billy Almick one was a little surprising for me. I know we talked about the Cannon Peebles one last week. That was pretty surprising. So, yeah, I mean, I don't remember the Twitter account, but I could send it to you if I find it. But if you have it, that is a long list of people in the transfer portal.
Yeah, and just going back to the JUCO thing, too, you think about just in the state of Florida that, you know, Santa Fe and Chipola are two really good JUCO programs that are feeders to both Florida State and Florida. It's like now it's why would I go through a JUCO when I can just, you know, pick off a Cannon Peebles who did it at NC State, did it at Division I level. You know, a Tommy White that did it at NC State, Paul Skeens who's proven it the last couple of years. You know, Kyle Teal, you know, Danny Corona. You know, why would I look at those JUCO programs when I can see that, okay, this guy has done it at the Division I level? I know Santa Fe has a really good program, but I don't know if that's going to translate to the Division I level. We've seen guys, you know, Billy Amick do it at Clemson. We know he's probably going to do the same thing at South Carolina, if not be a little better, because who knows if you know, the hitting coach is going to unlock something, you know, that's like, oh, wow, this is, you know, if I do this, I'll be an even better player at South Carolina. So, you know, like you said, I don't want to see it diminished, but it's going to be really hard, I think, for the JUCO products to be the way they were, because, you know, there's so much more talent at the Division I level. And I'm not trying to take away from the guys that go to JUCO, because a lot of them, you know, either A, didn't have the grades to go to a Division I school, or just were recruited too late, so they didn't have the scholarship to go to Division I, so they had to go to JUCO so they can continue playing, and then they'll, you know, open up whatever. Or, you know, in the off case of, you know, a Bryce Harper, you know, they needed to go to a JUCO real quick so they can get drafted right away, right? So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that route kind of changes, and if, you know, players will, instead of going to a JUCO, will just go to a mid-major, go to a Campbell, you know, a Coastal Carolina, a Louisiana, something like that, you know, and then just try to find their way to a higher Division I level.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that take right there. So, yeah, that's our transfer portal update, I guess, which will kind of be, I guess, somewhat of a recurring thing on this podcast. We got to keep that rolling because we know that's going to come all the time. And yeah, ultimately, a great college baseball season. I think for people who are new to the college game, you saw some good stuff. And it just makes me excited for next year, too, because we know how good it could be. And, you know, to see the guys actually be in Omaha, like the Stephen Shocks of things go to Omaha and Kendall Rogers be there, like just creating all that content. Super cool. Really cool for the game. And now we're stuck with, not stuck with, I don't want to say stuck, but, you know, Major League Baseball and, you know, Tampa Bay Rays continue to be the best, which is great. We love it. Yandy Diaz should be, in my opinion, should be starting the All-Star game at first base. But yeah, we're going to lock in on Rays. I mean, Cincinnati Reds are a great story. The Mets stink, which is fun. It's always fun to rant about them and their awfulness and their $364 million payroll for possibly one of the worst halves of baseball, I mean, you could possibly ever see, besides the Oakland A's and the Kansas City Royals.
Aaron Hicks is just absolutely mashing for the New York Yankees. Oh, wait, no. Sorry, Baltimore Orioles.
I mean, what the hell's going on here with this guy? I mean, he just gets resurgence now that he's in a different uniform in the same division. You know what? I'm actually happy for Aaron Hicks. You know, I mean, Sid Mullins goes down. They're like, all right, we need a temp center fielder, right? So you're like, all right, they're going to sign Aaron Hicks. He'll be here for a month, right? Just like, you know, how Gary Sanchez was a Met for a day. And now he's raking for the Padres. Like, everyone the Yankees lose is just is going off right now. And so Aaron Hicks is playing himself into a role. I'm happy for the guy. I wish it was for a team that wasn't in the division. But, you know, it is what it is. Happy for the guy. Gary Sanchez mashing with the Padres. Who would have thought that would have happened? Yeah, some really good stories in Major League Baseball right now that I think are undershadowed because or overshadowed, I should say, because everyone likes to keep talking about the Yankees and the Mets. And, you know, obviously the Rays are playing really good ball and how bad the Cardinals have been. The Dodgers have kind of been mediocre. Not mediocre. They've been above average. So, yeah, I mean, some good stories we're going to tap into coming down the line. We're getting close to the All-Star break here. It was just announced the Futures game stars were announced today. So there's some exciting stuff there. And, yeah, looking forward to it.
Jackson Holliday, the number one overall prospect. Is there Carl Crawford's son? I forgot his first name. Jason Crawford? I think. He just got drafted Maybe. Last year. And I forgot already. I know Junior Caminario.
Let's type into the good old goo.
With the Rays, their top hitting prospect, or their number two hitting prospect, I should say, behind Curtis Meade. You know, was in it. So the Futures game is always fun to me. I wish they would still go back to the USA versus world, because I think that was a lot cooler of a premise than just AL versus NL. But still, we get to see top pitching prospects like Andrew Painter and Owen White with the Phillies and the Texas Rangers, respectively. So Novelli Marte, who is a 21-year-old who was just promoted to AAA for the Reds. Another young guy coming up in the wings for the Reds. I know they already have Ellie De La Cruz and all their guys. And there was somebody else that I wanted. Oh, Andy Rodriguez, who we talked about a little earlier with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Their catcher / first baseman, Tyler Soderstrom. The A's, only hope really of a farm system. And here, let's see. I think I have some of the other names pulled up that I was kind of interested to see.
So as you bring him up, Carl Crawford's son's name is Justin Crawford. He's playing in the Phillies affiliate. 17th overall selection last year. He's hitting .346, 32 RBIs. No homers, just like his dad.
Marcelo Meyer of the Red Sox. Harry Ford, who played for Great Britain, that I actually saw hit a home run in Phoenix, which is pretty cool. Keston Hersted. You'll recognize this name. Drew Gilbert of the Houston Astros is on it. So,
I want to point out a name that you're missing here that you should be really excited to see. His name is Victor Scott. Just got called up to AA Springfield from the Peoria Chiefs today. Dude's got 50 stolen bases. He leads all of professional baseball in stolen bases. So, there's a guy to keep an eye on. West Virginia product. Now former Peoria Chief, Victor Scott.
Victor Scott the second.
Victor Scott the second. You got to get the emphasis on the second. You know, we don't say it on the broadcast, but all the visitors do. And that's okay because we like emphasis and we like getting it right.
But I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong, Brady House, you know, just Jordan Lawler, just the futures and the All-Star weekend's always pretty much my favorite because you started off strong with the futures game and you just kind of see what, you know, what's out there and who's out there and, you know, just some of these names that you've heard, like Mick Abel with the Phillies is another top prospect in their system. So it's just a lot of fun. And then obviously the All-Star game, I don't know about you, but it's one of the games that I love. Except I wish Nike didn't get a hold of the All-Star uniforms and make them wear the same uniforms.
Terrible.
I loved when they were wearing, you know, their actual uniforms. It was so nice. It was so much nicer.
I liked how they had, like, you know, the Home Run Derby designated uniforms, you know, like those American were the All-Star National uniforms. Yeah, American and National. And then when it came to the All-Star game, you wear your normal uniform. The only All-Star game jersey that I actually own is an Aaron Judge American League one from 2018 when they had it at Nats Park. But they wore their actual jerseys. Like Judge wore, they were the road team, so they wore the gray Yankee uniform. So the one that I own is the one that he would have wore in the Home Run Derby if he competed in it that year. I don't remember. He probably did. I liked it that way. And they had like a little patch on the side. It said like how many years they were an all-star with the star on it. And they kind of got away from that a little bit. So it's a little disappointing. I can't lie. I actually have a Judge all-star jersey. And then I have an Angels, LA Angels. For some reason, I ended up in Anaheim 8 years ago. A Mike Trout American League all-star jersey. And then the LA Angels all-star hat with like the rings on it, but my dog ate it, so that's gone. But shout out Dog's Immune System for keeping that thing nice and cozy. But I mean, yeah, I do miss those kind of uniforms, though. It's kind of getting carried away here with the Nike.
Yeah. So when did they start it? 2021.
I think it was after 2020. Was in Colorado. Because
2019 was in Cleveland, and they had
– And 2019, they still had Majestic. All-Stars. That was still the Majestic deal.
Yeah, and then Nike took over in 2020, I think. And then in 2020 – but in 2020, obviously, we didn't have the All-Star game. But in 2021, when it was in Colorado, that's when I found out I hated Nike's baseball marketing department because, they took away the fun – I mean, I know you have to sell jerseys, but you could still sell those jerseys in stores. Just have them wear it when it's not the game and then have them wear their regular uniforms for the game because it's so cool. If anything, I don't know if you've ever watched like the Senior Bowl or anything. They'll wear the same uniform, but then their helmets will be different. Or like in the Pro Bowl where they'll wear their, AFC or NFC Pro Bowl all-star uniforms, but then they'll wear their team helmet. At least have them wear their regular hat. So where there's a little bit of color.
Yeah, I'll say that. I mean, the swoosh just looks ugly. It still does. I mean, I know that was the big debate going into the year. I remember going to the team store at the Trop with you one day, and I was going to buy, the throwback Devil Rays jersey, but it's got not only the swoosh, but it's got Nike in writing over the swoosh because it's like the throwback Nike logo. Like, love the jersey, but I'm not buying it with the Nike, with it saying Nike, as Peter's probably going to go grab it right now. I mean, I can't stand it. I just don't like the fact that they have the swoosh on the chest. Like, put it in the back, on the collar, right? Like, don't put it in the front of the jersey. It's just annoying. Let's see what he's grabbing here. Is it the black one?
Are you talking about like
– No, it's the
like
white
that?
One.
No, it's the white one.
Yeah.
Where it says Nike. Yeah, I'm not –
Yeah, I'm
like,
just not a fan of that.
And then I got this
I'd just rather have it on the collar.
Like the USA Trout 2 one like that?
Yeah. Like I would just rather have the Nike like on the back collar, where the MLB logo is, because marketing, As long as it's on the uniform, who cares? But just not there.
Yeah. I don't know. I just rather have them wear their no because you could still wear their Nike jerseys. It's still going to say Nike.
Exactly.
Put the big swoosh on the side.
Exactly. I think the All-Star jerseys. I mean, they still sold. So whatever. But getting on a tangent about jerseys. Nothing wrong with that. We know there's collectors out there. But that's all I got for now. I think we got to get into Young Lad of the Week here. Plethora of options, a lot of options. You got one?
I feel like I had a good one, and then I forgot. I think I was going to go Ty Evans. I'll stick with Ty Evans. I'll go. Ty Evans broke the record for most home runs in the College World Series. Only a sophomore had the go ahead home run against Oral Roberts, and then absolutely berated TCU in their game, and then the grand slam and solo shot in yesterday's game kind of capped it off. Did he hit a home run today?
Yes, that was the last one in the eighth inning.
He did
to right field.
Yep, that's right. To break the record, duh.
Where, almost nailed Skeens in the pen.
Yeah, no, I think that was somebody else because Ty Evans' home run almost got robbed.
Oh, anyway, yeah.
But I'll go with tight ends.
But you're right. I'm going to go with Jordan Thompson. I mean, a storyline going into tonight's game was how Jordan Thompson was going to rebound. And, you know, fans got on him yesterday. I mean, all the errors, had a bad day at the plate. But today, I mean, the way the fans embraced him and he came through in the clutch, I mean, that was just a feel-good story for me. I mean, it's not often. And, I mean, Jordan Thompson's not a top guy on that LSU team. I mean, he's one of them because he starts, but he's not like the top dog. It's not often when you got a guy who's batting in your lower third of the order, getting his name chanted every single pitch that he sees in the batter's box, all five or six times he comes to the plate. I thought that was really cool, and he bounced back really nice. So LSU fans are great. I mean, they were loud all College World Series long. They were loud all season long at the box. I just thought that embrace was really cool, and I'm glad the kid was able to rebound from it. So Jordan Thompson is my young lad of the week as we conclude the 2023 college baseball season.
And I'll try to find it real quick, but did you see LSU had like almost 50,000 Jello shots?
Yeah.
At the one bar that does like the Jello shots for charity. I'm going to try to find it, but I don't think they have it updated, but
dude, the party's still going on.
they were saying whether or not they were going to get the 60,000 because like they had sold 90,000 and 50,000 of them were from LSU fans, which is absurd.
I think I saw they sold out at one point.
I wouldn't doubt it. Now the real question is, do they get to 60,000 tonight?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that party's going to go on all night. Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
like Jay Johnson's got to let the players go to that bar, too.
I would hope he does.
Of age.
Of age, yeah, but no clown questions with Bryce Harper. You know, we got to, you know, let the players, you know, do what they want to do. But, hey, you know.
Like Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz, like, hey, thanks for winning us a national championship. You're going to be in the pros next year. Like, go ahead, go to the bar.
Like, instead of you
like, get. What Skeens is going to go to Jay Johnson, like. Like, what are you going to do? I'm done. Like yeah. It's Garrett Cole after the 2019 World Series. Like, do I have to answer this question? I'm not a, you know, employee of the team anymore.
Yeah. It's like, instead of your recovery gummies, you know, go have your Jello shots, get your gelatin in that way, you know, just to, you know, satisfy the winning desire and go in there. And it's for a good cause too. It's for charity. Like, you know, if I'm Jay Johnson, I'm sending all the players there.
I'm Jay Johnson, I'm in there with the players.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he better be in that celebration if they're doing the shot, and he better be buying all of them. So, yeah, really cool. I think that establishment is called Rocco's or Roscoe's, something like that. But, yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I am 5.5 hours away, car ride to Omaha. When I found out it was going to be Louder Skeens, I nearly almost got in the car and went. I mean, that's how exciting it is. I think it's something that if you're a college baseball follower, you're going to get into this a little more. I think that's something that, you know, I know it's in the middle of nowhere. It really is. But I feel like you got to experience it once because it just looked super cool.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a great atmosphere too. And it's like LSU fans traveled really well for this College World Series too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. A lot of groups did, you know, I thought the Wake fans traveled really well, but they were just overmatched. Like LSU, no matter who they played, they just overmatched everybody. And like Tennessee's got a good fan base, and they kicked the daylights out of Tennessee's fan base, kicked the daylights out of them. Florida, you know, they had a decent crowd. You know, LSU was just, I mean, they brought the noise. It was really cool.
Yeah. So now we just got to wait, 350 days? No.
Think
358 days
to the next College World Series. Yeah, and hey, if we're doing days. A little math, if we're doing a little math, I believe the regular season is set to start on the if I'm right, the 16th of February, because it started on the 17th of February this year. So yeah, we're in for a good 2024. But that is it, pretty much, for a college baseball portion. If any cool names come up in the portal, we'll tell you. But other than that, you know, if you tuned in to hear us talk about MLB and you haven't heard that the last few episodes, Sorry, but that was where the good baseball was. It was in the collegiate game. We will be back to regular scheduled programming. MLB, try and get some guests on here. Had a really good idea before we came on. Wanted to get that out there. So, yeah, we'll try our best. And, yeah, this is episode 9. So we're rolling here. We're halfway through the minor league season, too. So we're off to a good start.
Maybe we'll get an update on those Peoria Chiefs as they go into the All-Star break.
3-0, baby. And you might have noticed I got a little muzzy going on right now. It's horrible. I know it's terrible, but you know what? I made a bet with a friend. It had nothing to do with the team, but the team has not stopped winning. And you know what? As long as they keep winning, it's not coming off. Sorry.
Yeah, you can't cut it.
No, absolutely not. Big home series starting Wednesday, so... Yeah, I mean, it's not coming off. We're undefeated in the second half. It's great. It's a good time.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's going to do it for this episode. Episode 9 of the Young Lads. We'll have our double-digit episode next week. Probably talk a little bit more about All-Star voting as, let's see, this weekend is the first, so that would be the last full week of the regular season before the All-Star break, so we'll talk a little bit more about that, along with maybe some trade deadline acquisitions some teams need to make. But for Harris Eisenberg and I'm Peter DeFee Jr. saying so long for episode 9 of the Young Lads, and we'll talk to you again next week.